Today's shiur is Masecht Baba Metzia, Daf Yudalad, and we will begin on Daf Yudalad Amud Aleph, 10 lines from the top. We had learned in the Mishnah, if somebody finds a shtar in the street, there was a question in the Mishnah, is it returned to the loiva or to the malva? The Mishnah also, as we discussed at length in the previous shiur, draws a distinction between a shtar that has in it a chrayis nechasim, that has in it this clause that there's a mortgage, there's a lien on one's property, if versus another type of shtar. Because as we explained in the previous shiurim, if there is a clause like that in the shtar, so then the lekuchis could be adversely affected. And Ramey's opinion was that he made a difference between a shtar that has a chrayis nechasim, which we just explained, the lekuchis could be adversely affected, and therefore, even if the loiva agrees that he still owes the money, we can't return the shtar, versus a shtar that doesn't have a chrayis nechasim, so there the lekuchis, there are no lekuchis to be adversely affected, because there's no obligation in the shtar to the lekuchis. The only one that could be affected is the loiva, and therefore, says Rameyer, if the loiva agrees that he still owes the money, we can return the shtar to the malva. The Chacham, however, did not make such a distinction, for according to the Chachamim, even if the shtar doesn't have this clause clearly written into it, the halacha still remains that there is an automatic lien on all of the property one has to pay his loans. Says the Gemara, Amishmu, my tamaid rabbanon. Why did the rabbanon hold that even if the shtar does not explicitly state this mortgage, it's there? Savri, because the rabbanon are of the opinion that chrayis tosayfahu, that if the clause is missing from the shtar, it's because the cipher forgot to put it into the shtar, but it certainly belongs there. And there are two ways that the Rishonim explain how to understand a chrayis tosayfah. Some Rishonim say that certainly the malva and the loiva told the cipher to include this clause, just the cipher forgot. Others explain that it's not that the malva, the loiva necessarily forgot to tell the cipher. It's even if the malva and the loiva forgot to tell the cipher, even if we know that it makes no difference, we can always assume that it belongs there. So again, the two pshatim, one pshat is that they told him and he forgot to put it in. The other pshat is that they didn't tell him, but they didn't have to tell him, because every shtar for sure should have that clause in. What is the basis of this machlokes? So I saw a number of explanations amongst the mefarshim. Some mefarshim say, simple pshat, umdana, can we automatically assume that this belongs in every shtar? The man that holds a chrayis tosayfah feels that we could automatically assume that this belongs in every shtar. The other man says that we can't make such an assumption. Another way of explaining it, along the same lines, is that certainly we can have an umdana, and certainly we can have an assumption that every shtar, that this is included in every deal. However, the fact that we have such an umdana doesn't necessarily mean that we could put it into the shtar. One man Dharma says, the fact that we have such an umdana does not mean that we have a right to put it into the shtar without specific instruction. And the other man Dharma says that the assumption is that not only do we have an assumption, but we can even put it into the shtar based on that assumption. Another way that I saw that the Mefarshim explained this machloikis is based on the concept of Shibuda Daraisa. How strong is the concept of Shibud? The man that holds a chrayis toy soifer feels that the concept of shibud is an extremely strong concept that can be always applied. The other man that holds that we can't necessarily apply the concept of a chrayis toy soifer. Furthermore, there is an interesting shaila. It's actually a machloikis of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Now we're speaking about the concept of shibud, and that one could assume that the that there is a shibud in a shtar. And certainly, if the shibud is clearly written into the shtar, then we certainly say that there is a shibud. The question is, what does the shibud affect? That means, if I borrow money today, if I borrow money today and all of my assets become meshubud to that loan, what is the halacha regarding the assets that I buy after this date? Will the halacha be that that those loans will, that all assets that I ultimately buy will also become meshubah to that loan, or only the assets that I own at the time of the loan are mortgaged to the loan? It really depends, it should depend, on the question of other makna or ain other makna davishloi baloilam, because an asset that I don't own, how can I make a shibud? And actually, that is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, that the only assets that can become mortgaged are assets that I already own. The Ramah, however, disagrees, and the Ramah says that even assets that I don't own at this time can become mortgaged to a loan that I take. There's also a very interesting pshat in understanding this entire concept of a chrayis from the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav says, he says this is a pshat in the Rambam, that when we speak about a chrayis, that if I sell something to somebody, it becomes mortgaged, and then if that property is taken away from the person I sold it to because there was a lien on that mortgage, on that property that was exercised, how do we view this concept of a chrayis? Do we view a chrayis as a separate clause? That means I accepted upon myself that if I sell you property and then that property is confiscated, I will replace the property that's confiscated? Or do we understand a chrayis just a separate clause? Or do we understand a chrayis that it's a part of the sale, that it's inherent in the sale, that if there's a pre-existing lien on this property, I have to refund the buyer because if it was taken away from him? And what would be the nafka mina if we view it as a separate clause, or we view it as part of the actual sale? The nafka mina is that if the property is indeed taken away and I have to compensate the person who bought the property from me because it was taken from him, at what rate do I compensate him? Do I compensate him according to the price that he pays, or do we compensate him at the price that it's worth at the time of the confiscation? He says, the Brisker Rav, that according to the Rambam, that a chrayis, specifically we follow the opinion that we're learning now of Shmuel, that a chrayis toa soifer, and it's inherent in the sale, and therefore I have to compensate at the value it had when I sold it. However, he says, according to the Magen Mishnah's opinion, he says, is that it's a separate clause, and therefore, according to the Magen Mishnah, the buyer is compensated with the value it had at the time of the confiscation. Says the Gemara, Amalei Rava Bar Iti L'Rav Idi Bar Ovid. Says Rava Bar Iti to Rav Idi Bar Ovid. Umi Amashmu Hochi. Can we say that Shmuel is of the opinion that a chrayis is tar soifer? Vamashmuel, shvach shvar b'shibud tzarech limolich. Shibud means, as we just explained, that a lien is created. Shvach means that if I sell property to somebody and there's a mortgage on the property, and I agree that should that property be confiscated from my buyer, I will compensate him, as we just discussed. But I also agree that not only will I pay him for what he paid, that he lost that property, but that I would also pay him for any improvements, shvach, for any improvements that he made in the field. And shvar means that not only did I agree to compensate him if he loses anything, but I agree to compensate him with my choices property. In all of these cases, tzarech limolech. The cipher, before he includes such a clause into the shtar, has to receive permission from the parties who are getting involved in this deal that they agree that such a clause be written into the shtar. But if we're learning a chrayis to a cipher, then why does he have to get permission? Aren't we learning that it's automatic? And the Rishonim point out that even though we're saying that the halach is that in this case, tzarech lemolech, that he has to get permission, that means if he didn't hear the parties as they were getting involved with this transaction say that they're going to obligate themselves to this obligation. However, if as the transaction was being negotiated, the cipher heard them agree, then he doesn't have to include it into the, then he doesn't have to lemolech. He doesn't have to ask them. He could automatically include it. Furthermore, the Rishonim point out that if they agreed to shvach and shvar, that the seller agreed to pay for any improvements and pay for his choice's property, why do you have to write shibud? Obviously, he agreed to pay. So Rishonim explained the way to understand the Gemara is as follows. These are three different levels. Shibud is the first level. Sometimes he agrees that it should the property be confiscated, he'll pay. But he didn't agree to necessarily pay for any improvements. Or he didn't necessarily agree to pay for with his choice's property. That those are different levels of obligation. So certainly, however, we should say that if he agreed to shvach, shibud is included. And if he agreed to shvar, shibud and shvach are automatically included. But we see from here that you have to get permission from the parties. And it isn't automatic. How does Shmuel say, achrayis toyo cipher? Should we suggest, lema manda amaha, loy amaha? And there are two pshatim that I saw in the Rishonim, how to understand this line also. Some Rishonim suggest, what the Gemara means to say is, that there's a machloikis, what Shmuel's opinion was. Another way of explaining is that there is no machloikis what Shmuel held. Rather, the way to understand this line is as follows. As we began today's shiur, the way we began today's shiur was Shmuel, we introduced the concept of achrayis toy cipher in order to be able to understand the opinion of the Rabbanon of the Mishnah. Says the Gemara that perhaps Shmuel, when he was coming to explain the opinion of the Rabbanon, that's when he said achrayis toy cipher. But as far as his own opinion is concerned, he will not agree with this concept of achrayis toy cipher. Says the Gemara, loy kasha. No, there is no contradiction between the opinions of Shmuel. Can b'shtar hava? By b'shtar hava, there's a concept of loyov inish zuzi b'chti. If I lend somebody money, I certainly did him a favor that I lent him the money. And I certainly automatically put a mortgage on all of his property, that if he doesn't have the ability to pay me, there should be a mortgage on the property. Whereas when I sell somebody property, there's a concept of ovet inish dezoven arlo yomi. Sometimes somebody buys property for a day. And the way I always understand the Gemara is, what it means is sometimes somebody wants a good deal. And in order to get a good deal, he agrees to buy the property unsecured. Meaning he agrees to buy the property that if the property will be confiscated from him, he doesn't have the ability to go back to the seller. That, and he maybe gets a better deal, a better price. That's why there, achrayis isn't automatic unless it's written in. Although the Rishonim say that even though our Gemara is drawing a distinction between Halva and Mekach HaMemkar, in the case of Mekach HaMemkar, there are two ways that a property that one buys would be confiscated. One is a situation where the property ended up being a stolen piece of property, as we will discuss at great length later in the shiur. And another is a situation where the property was confiscated by a Baal Choyv. Say the Rishonim, that when Al Gemara says that a Mekach HaMemkar, a Chrayis, is not automatically included, that is if the property is taken away by a Baal Choyv. So unless it was clearly spelled out, the buyer doesn't have recourse to the seller. But if it turns out that the property that the buyer bought was a stolen piece of property, there the halacha is that even by Mekach HaMemkar, a Chrayis is automatically understood to be included. It's interesting that I saw that the Shailos HaTshuvos Ha'elef L'Chashleimer of Shlomo Kluger uses this concept of Leishadi Iz Inshi Zuzi Bechti to teach us an interesting Shailah. He says, Rachmana Litzlan, somebody received notice that a telegram that a relative of his, Rachmana Litzlan, passed away and that he has to sit Shiva. The question that comes up is one to be concerned that maybe he has an enemy, Rachmana Litzlan, who wanted to cause him tsar, and that's why he sent him this telegram saying that a close relative of his died, but it really never happened. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, our Gemara just taught us the concept of Leishadi in Ezuzi Bichti. People don't just throw out money for nothing. So the person who spent the money for this telegram obviously wouldn't have done it just to cause tsar to the person who received the telegram, and we could assume that it is true, and therefore the person would have to sit Shiva. And the Gemara in fact quotes a story to corroborate this psak. Kehu davu ba'ihi. There was a situation where davu ba'ihi zove elisa machse. He bought an apartment from his sister. Also ba'choyiv tarfiminei. And then his sister owed somebody money. She obviously did not have the means to pay for the any other way to pay for this apartment. So to pay her choyiv. So the ba'choyiv took the apartment away. Also kamei de mashmul. And now he came to mashmul that he wants recourse to get his money back for the apartment. Amala. So he asked him, Koslach Achrayis, did you include an Achrayis clause in your contract? Amalei Lois. So he said no. Amalei Imkein Zil Shlomo, go in peace. Amalei. So he asked him, didn't we just learn at the beginning of today's shir, Vamahu the Amar Achrayis Toysoifahu? So it should be automatically included, even though if it wasn't clearly spelled out in the shtar. Amalei. So he told him, where is a Chrayis automatically included? Hani mili b'shtar halva. That's regarding a shtar halva. Ava b'shtar mekach, umemka loy. It's not automatically included, as we explained, because the order is inish to zov an ara l'yoyme. Sometimes people buy property only for one day. Says the Gemara, Amar Abaya, Ruvain shemocha sod l'shim b'chrayis. If Ruvain sells a piece of property to Shimon with a Chrayis, and now Ruvain does have any money. Therefore, Obor Baal Choyv de Ruvain. So Ruvain owes somebody money, and he doesn't have the ability to pay. So the Katarfle Minei. So he wants to take the property from Shimon. Says the Gemara, Dinuhu, the Ozel Ruvain Mishtoi Dinu Badei. Ruvain could be the one to come to the Din Torah. V'loy matza amalei, and the Baal Choyv cannot say to Ruvain, La Baal Devaram D'Diyat, I have no Din Torah with you. The person that owes the money is, the person that I'm taking from is Shimon, not from you. The amalei, because Ruvain can argue, the Mafkis Minei, whatever you take from Shimon, Olai D'Di Hadar, I will have to pay ultimately for, and therefore I am considered a party to this Din Torah. So the obvious question that comes up is, if he's claiming that he will have the ability that he will have to pay, so obviously Reuven has the ability to pay. So if Reuven has the ability to pay, why did it go to Shimon? The halacha is you only go to the buyer if Reuven doesn't have the ability to pay. So I saw two terutzim to this question. One terutz is that we're referring to a situation of an apoiteki. We're referring to a situation that he had said that this specific property should be pledged to pay this loan. So yes, Reuven, the seller, has other properties. But even though Reuven, the seller, has other properties, since this property was so designated that it should be taken from this property, therefore he could go to Shimon. Another pshat is that Reuven indeed doesn't currently have the ability to pay his debt. Therefore the Baal Chayif takes the property from Shimon. But Reuven, as we all do, live with the hope that we will have the ability to ultimately be able to pay for this debt. And therefore he says, at that point, I will be here a relevant party. And therefore today already, I have a right to be part of the Din Torah. Which opens up an interesting question that I saw the Tzais discusses. Here we're saying that even though somebody is currently not a Baal Chayif, the fact that he ultimately may become a Baal Chayif, Baal Dover, may become a relevant party to the case, it already makes him be considered a party. So ask the Tzais, in every case of Eidus, we know the halacha is that one may not be an Eid unless if he's a Baal Dover. So why should we not be concerned in many situations of Eidus that even though the person is not currently a Baal Dover, he may be ultimately a Baal Dover, and that should disqualify him from being an Eid? Says the Tzais that there are two types of disqualification of Eidus. One is where the person is inherently disqualified, not because we're concerned that he's a liar, just because he is part of the case, he's a possible aid. And sometimes the concern is that because he has negius, because he has a personal involvement here, he may lie. Says the Tzais, when the person is inherently disqualified because he's part of the case, then he's always possible. When the concern is only that because he has negius, he may not be an aid because he may say something which is not true, that's only in a situation where the person is currently, where we currently have a concern that he may lie. The fact that he may have a reason to lie in the future does not make him into a Baal Dover to disqualify him as an aid. Another issue that Tysus discusses is that we're having a discussion here if Reuven could come to the case instead of Shimon. So says Tysus that the entire discussion that the Gemara is having is if Shimon didn't appoint Reuven to be a lawyer. Because if Shimon appointed Reuven to be his lawyer, then certainly Reuven could be the lawyer and come to the case. However, that's really a machlokes rishonim. Tysus clearly indicates that the nitva, Shimon in this case, who we're claiming owes, she has to turn over his property, can't appoint anyone as his lawyer. However, there are rishonim that suggest that one cannot automatically appoint anyone as a lawyer. You could only the toveya could appoint a lawyer, not a nitva. And it seems that that is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. However, the Urim V'Tumim says that if the Nitva is personally present at the proceedings in the Beis Din, then certainly he could appoint a lawyer to express his position if he doesn't feel qualified. Ikud Amri, and some say That even if Reuven sold the property without a chrayis, he could still come to this din Torah in the place of Shimon. Domalei, because he says that even though I don't have any personal financial stake here, because I sold the property shleibel chrayis, still loynichali the level of Shimon Trumas Alai, I don't want that Shimon should have any complaint against me, and therefore I want to come and say that the Baal Chayiv perhaps doesn't have a right to claim this property. So the Rishonim asked the obvious question: what's the difference if Reuven comes or Shimon comes? The claims that will be made are the same claims. So why is the Gemara so focused who actually comes? So the simple teretz is that different people have different ability in expressing and articulating themselves. And therefore the Gemara says that Reuven perhaps could articulate himself better than Shimon. And therefore, does Reuven have a right to be the person to come to the din Torah? Along the same lines, Reuven is more familiar with the details of the Chayiv. The Baal Chayiv, some Rishonim explain, may be more embarrassed to speak in front of Reuven, who knows the exact details, versus in speaking in front of Shimon, who really isn't personally involved with the Chayiv. Another teretz that I saw is that, let's say, both the Baal Chayiv and Shimon are people, sometimes Bez Din Paskins, that a Shvua has to be taken. And here we have both individuals are people who are not trusted to make a shvur. That the halach is that we follow the chayiv. But maybe Reuven is an individual who we will believe with a shvur. And therefore, Reuven prefers to come to the din Torah over Shimon. Another teretz, a concept that we discussed at the end of Masechta Bava Kamma, is the concept of Gilgul Shvur, which we said that sometimes if one is obligated to make a shvur midoraisa, there's a concept of gilgul shvur, of rolling over a shvur, and we can make the person make other shvurs. And maybe the Baal Chayiv owes, in this case, Reuven a shvur midoraisa, and therefore, because of the concept of gilgul shvur, he'll be able to force the Baal Chayiv to make the other shvur. Whereas to Shimon, there is no obligation of a shvur, and since there's no obligation of a shvur, he can't employ gilgul shvur. Another concept that we also discussed in Masechta Bava Kamma is that sometimes they want to go to the Beis Din HaGadol, and Reuven has the time and the ability to go to the Beis Din HaGadol, and Shimon doesn't, and the Beis Din HaGadol is a better Beis Din to have the case in. One final teretz is that since Reuven was personally involved in this case, so perhaps Beis Din Das Taninon is going to make more claims on behalf of somebody who's personally involved in the case versus Shimon, who's only a lekuach, only bought the property but is not actually personally involved. Another halacha, Amar Abaya. Reuven shemachas sada l'shimin shleibach rayis. Reuven sells a property to Shimon against shleibach rayis, and then v'yotzla seeken. There are people that are making claims about the property. So as Tosfos explains, we're not referring to a situation where somebody bought a property, and as Rashi explains, machlokes, first we'll explain this machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says that in this situation, he had not yet paid for the property, and before he actually pays for the property, a seekin, and here we say what Tosfos said, it's not that something bad happens to the property. Because if something bad happens to the property, there the seller could say to the buyer, Mazloch Goyrim, your bad luck caused that this should happen to the property. Rather, here it's a situation that either it turns out that a seeking, there's a claim that this property was a stolen piece of property that the seller had no right to sell. It turns out that the seller has debts that the property is mortgaged to, and therefore the buyer wants to get out of the deal. And as I said, Rashi says he has not yet paid for the property, and therefore the Gemara says he could pull out of the deal. Rebbeinu Tam, Tosfos quotes Rebbeinu Tam, says that if he didn't pay for the property, that certainly he could pull out of the deal. Here, it's referring to a situation that he did pay for the property, but as we have learned many times, kesef alone, just paying for the property, doesn't create a situation of ownership. You have to have a ma'aser kinyan. But even though you have to have a ma'aser kinyan, we've also learned there's a concept of mishapara, that once somebody gave his word, and certainly if he paid, he can't pull out of the deal. Here, because this rumor came up, so the Gemara is teaching us that it actually, if he did not do a ma'aser kinyan, if he did not do a chazaka, which we'll see in a moment what that means, the halach is, he could pull out. However, once he did a chazaka, then the halach is, he can't pull out. For the seller at that point can say to the buyer, Chaisa the kitri service for kablis. You bought yourself a bag full of nuts. You got yourself into, the Rishonim explain, into a naughty situation. Or, other Rishonim explain, that it's a bag full of ear. You got yourself into a bad deal, but that is not my problem. Ask the Gemara, Meimus I have a chazaka. What is considered a chazaka? Says the Gemara, Mechidayish HaMitzri. From when he walks along the borders of the field. And actually, this is the subject of a Machloikus Rishonim. What does Daish HaMitzri mean? Some Rishonim explain that Daish HaMitzri means, as we just said, just walking along the borders of the field. Other Rishonim say that Daish HaMitzri means that he actually did something in the field, that he put up a fence. Others say just the opposite, that he bought a property right next to his property that he already owned, and there was a fence dividing these two properties, and he removed the fence. And the Mefarshim explain, actually, that this Machloikas Rishonim, or how we are to define Daish HaMitzri, is connected to the Machloikas of Rashi and Tosfos, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, that we just quoted. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, that he already paid for the field, so even a minimal kinyan chazaka of just walking along the field is enough. However, according to Rashi, that he didn't pay for the field, so a stronger chazaka is required actually doing something in the field. Vikid Amri, and that is another opinion, that a field b'chrayis nami, that even if I bought this property with a chrayis, and then I become aware that there is a claim against this field, that it's stolen, or that the obligations, I still have to take the field. And then, because the seller could say to me, "Domali ach v'terfach v'shamloch," when the property will be seized from you, I'll compensate you. Until then, you have to carry out the deal. There are many important and interesting halachas that are discussed around this Gemara. One issue that the Nesiva says is that if we're going to follow this din, that if there's a rumor about the status of this field, one can back out of the deal. So let's say somebody buys a property and he wants to back out of the deal, he'll just start a rumor and like that have an ability to back out of the deal. Says the Nesivus that it's when Al Gemara says that there's a seeking, there's a rumor, and therefore the buyer could back out of the deal, it's only in a situation that there's a strong rumor with a very strong basis that was brought to Beis Din. Not any rumor could give the buyer a right to back out of the deal. Furthermore, the Ravid says that we're learning that if there was a rumor he could back out of the deal, that doesn't mean that he could do this indefinitely. He only has the right to back out of the deal from when he heard the rumor and had a chance to investigate if the rumor is true or not. That is the statute of limitations, how long he could back out of the deal. But it's not that it's indefinite. He could come a year later. I heard a rumor a year ago. Another question that I saw the Rishonim discuss is that one exercised this right. The Gemara says that if there's a rumor and he could back out of and therefore he wants to back out of the deal, he's allowed to back out of the deal. And then it turns out that the rumor was incorrect. So what is the halacha? Does the deal come right back in place or not? The Rosh says that once the deal was broken correctly, as our Gemara is teaching us, because there was as the Nesiva says, a legitimate rumor, then the deal is off, and either party at that point can say that they don't want to come back to the deal. The Marit, based on this Gemara, says that, and it's something that we have to be careful how we repeat, but the Marit says that if somebody made a shidduch, got engaged to a girl, and it turns out that there was information given to him or information withheld from him, which was critical information about the health of the girl, about the status of the family of the girl, that, and we know that in halacha it is very serious and very difficult to pull out of a shidduch. In based on our Gemara, he says it may be a valid reason to pull out of a shidduch. There's a very interesting vort from the Kli Yoker. The Kli Yoker asks, we find that in the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu in Parashas Lech Lecha, Ki es kol aretz asha toroya l'cho at nena ulazaracha at oylam. And there's another pasuk where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu, Kum es halich ba'aretz l'orcha ul'rachba ki l'cho at nena. So the Kli Yoker asks two questions. One question is that what the pasuk says, that Riyah alone will cause that this should be yours. And the other pasuk says, Salif, you have to walk. And the other question he asks is that the first pasuk says, Kilchat Nenol Zarechar Oilam, forever. And the other pasuk says, Kilchat Nena, but doesn't say Ula Zarachar Oilam. Says the Kli Yoker, Klal Yisrael Avram Avinu, ownership in Eretz Yisrael is defined on two levels, on a Ruchni Yistiga level and on a Gashmi Yistiga level. Ruchni Yistiga level, we know that Eretz Yisrael is the Eretz HaKodesh. The Pasuk of Kis Kala Oretz Asher Taroya refers to that Ruchni Yistiga level. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him, as soon as you put your eyes on Eretz Yisrael will receive and attain this level of Kedusha. And this level of Kedusha that Eretz Yisrael has, L'cha et nana ul'zarecha ad olam, remains forever. But there's another aspect of Avram Avinu, Klal Yisrael, ownership of Eretz Yisrael. And that's a gashmistiga, a physical ownership. We are the owners. Eretz Yisrael belongs to Klal Yisrael. But just like we're learning in our Gemara, to attain physical ownership, one has to do a chazakah. For that, Avram Avinu was told, Kum es halich ba'aretz, lach ba'l'rachba. Like we just said, you have to have da'ish amitzri. You have to actually walk on the property. But furthermore, our gashmishtiga ownership of Eretz Yisrael is not forever. It's only as long as we act appropriately and are deserving to remain in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Gemara, Itma, Hamaycha Sadal Chaveri, if somebody sells a property to someone else, V'nimtza Shena Shaloi, and then it turns out that the property he had sold was a stolen piece of property. Rav Omer, Rav says, Yesh Lemos, the purchaser has a right to get back the money that he paid for the property, the Yesh LeShvach, and he also is entitled to get back for improvements that he put into the field. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, Mos Yesh Lo, he's entitled to get back his purchase, the money that he paid for the property. However, Shvach Ein Lo, he isn't entitled to get back for the improvements he put into the field. There are different opinions amongst the Rishonim how to understand the Machloikis Rav and Shmuel. The Baal Amor explains that Achray is Toys Seifer, and since Achray is Toys Seifer, so he's entitled even to the improvement. Shmuel holds Achray is Lav Toys Seifer, and therefore for the improvements, it's not immediately credited to him, but the fact that somebody bought a stolen piece of property, as we said earlier, has nothing to do with Achrayas Toya Seifer or not. If somebody buys a stolen piece of property, he's entitled to be compensated for what he laid out. Another pshat is that everybody agrees a charai is toy cipher. The question is, does derive its pshat? The question is, how far to apply a charai is toy cipher? Do we apply it even to the shvach, to the improvement, Rav's opinion, or do we only apply it to the purchase price, not to the improvement? Barmanei Rav Huna. So they asked Rav Huna the following question. Perish lo'es shvach ma'u. Where it was clearly said, where the seller explicitly said to the purchaser that he will compensate him if he puts improvement into the land and then the land is confiscated from him. What will be the halacha? And what does the Gemara mean? Do we say, Tam de Shmuel Mishum de Loi Pirish Vacha? The reason Shmuel says that the purchaser is not entitled to get back for the improvements that he put into the property is because it wasn't explicitly said. However, Hocha Pirishla, here where it was explicitly stipulated, he will get that back. A Dilma, Tam de Shmuel, maybe the reason is a different reason altogether. Kim de Lesley Karka. It turns out that what the seller sold was never his. And now he has to give back, and the sale was void. So what happened here was that the purchaser, so to speak, lent money to the seller. And we have a concept of ribis, that wherever somebody gets back more than he gave, it looks like ribis. And therefore here it looks like ribis if the seller will give the purchaser not only as much as he paid to buy the property, but also add on top of it the money, the amount that he put in for improvements. Kivin de Lesley Karka, since the sale was always never a sale, so it's really no more than a loan, and if the seller will give the purchaser more than he spent, more than he paid, mechzi kribus. Amalei in v'lav rafi biyoda. He didn't give him a clear answer. I saw two pshatim, and the Rishonim had to understand this. Some say it was that wasn't able to give a clear answer. Another pshat is sometimes he said yes and sometimes he said no. He wasn't able to clarify himself. Itmar, so says the Gemara, Amar of Nachman Amar Shmuel Mos Yeshloi, he's entitled to get back the money they laid out. Shvach Einloi, but he doesn't get compensated for the improvements. And if Afal Pish appears in Shvach, and even were he to explicitly stipulate that he has to pay for the improvements, still he doesn't, the seller doesn't give it to him. My Tama, Kivin, as we just explained, Kivin the Karka, Eloi, Schar Ma'asav, Oimer Benetloi. It looks like ribbis. Esrei, Lovel Rav Nachman, it says in the Mishnah, Emitzin, we do not collect Lachilas Peiris for consumption of produce. Ulshvach kakos. We'll explain this soon. Ulamazan ishva bonus. If somebody marries and he is going to be obligated to support his wife and children, we don't take that obligation in the chosim nishibadim from mortgaged properties. They take an oilam. But mazan ishva bonus, since it's impossible to really assess, estimate how much one will have to spend on supporting his family. We don't know exactly when his daughters will get married. We don't know exactly what the cost of food will be. So if I buy a piece of property from somebody, and this individual, that's what a title search is actually all about, and this individual has a family, has wife and daughters that he has to support, so if I'm a smart person, I will make sure that he has enough money available to himself to support his wife and daughters, that I won't have to give up my property for that mortgage. But since this is a number, as we just explained, that can't be properly estimated, Chazal, in order not to impede the ability of business to be conducted, said that this obligation is not taken from the Chosim Shabbatim. So what do we see from here? Mishabdihu de la Mafkinan, that we can't take this obligation from the Chosim Shabbatim. But what do we see from not mortgage property? Mafkinon, that we do take these things. Victonimia, and why were one of the things that we said you could collect? L'shvach kakos, for improvement. My, lav mekayach b'gazlan. Isn't this Mishnah referring to a situation that if somebody ended up buying stolen property and he improved, and he put improvements into that property, the Mishnah, and now the property was taken, the Mishnah is teaching us that this purchaser is entitled to get back that money. Maybe not from mortgaged properties, but he's entitled to get back that money, says the Meraloi. Here it's referring to a situation of a Baal Choyv, where the person bought a property, then it was taken away from this by the seller's creditors, and now he goes back to the seller, and he has a right to collect the improvements from Nechasim Nechayrim. Ask the Gemara if we're saying that that Mishnah is referring to Baal Choyv, Emeresha. It says, Emetzin Lachilas Peiris. We don't take if he had Peiris. Viv Baal Choyv, that means if the purchaser lost the Peiris, the question is, can he go back to the seller for those Peiris? Now ask the Gemara, if this Mishnah is referring to Baal Choyv, Miesle Peiris, Does a creditor who's allowed to take property have a right to take the payers? V'amishmul Baal Choyv goyves hashvach. If Baal Choyv comes to collect a mortgaged piece of property, not only does he take the property, but he even takes whatever improvements there are in the land. Shvach in av a payers loy. So if this Mishnah is talking about a Baal Choyv, how could he have ever taken the payers? Ella, it must be talking about a goyves of a nixel. And we see that the purchaser has a right to get back the amount of shvach that he put in. So, and if we can explain that the ratio is referring to goyz of a nigzel, the sefer is also talking about a goyz of a nigzel, and the Mishnah is teaching us that he's entitled to get back his improvements. So the marmidi area, we don't have to explain the Mishnah that way. Hakadisa, the first part of the Mishnah that speaks about peiris is speaking about a situation of a goyz of a nigzel, otherwise there would be no claim on the peiris. However, for Hakadisa, the sefer is talking about a Baal Choyv, not a goyz of a nigzel, and we don't have a raya. What is the din by goyz of a nigzel if you have a right to collect the shvach or not? Ask the Gemara v'loy tani hachi. We didn't learn like that in a brisa. The Braisa says, "L'shvach kakos keitzad." How do we measure shvach kakos? Harei shegazlu sadam chaveroi. If somebody steals a field from somebody else, v'harei tzoyts mitachs yodoi. And now it's taken away. Shugoyva, when he comes to collect compensation for his loss, goyvas a keren min chasim shabadim. The amount that he paid, he's allowed to collect from the chasim shabadim. V'shvach, he's allowed to collect from the Chasim Nechayrim. So we see clearly that he's allowed to collect for the improvements that he put into the property. Now goes the Gemara further. Hey Chidami, exactly what is the case that we're discussing? Ilema Kediktani, if we're saying that we're going to learn the Braisa as it says in the as the words say, Gazlam Aman Govi. The Braisa says that the Gazlan collects. The Gazlan collects? He's a Gazlan. Elav is in the case of the Braisa, where somebody stole the field, and then and he sold it to someone else, and then that purchaser improved the property, and the Braisa is teaching us that the amount that he paid he could collect from the sellers nechasim mushabadim, and the improvements he could collect from the mnechayrim amalei. You had to revise the Braisa, because as we said a moment ago, the words of the Braisa that the Gazlan collects were obviously incorrect. So once we're revising the Braisa, Tritznami, we could say that the Braisa is talking about a Baal Choyv. That's the case that the halacha will be that he pays, that he could collect not only what he paid, but also for the improvements. But perhaps if somebody bought a stolen piece of property, because we have the concern that Shmuel taught us that it looks like ribbis, he can't collect not only from the Chasm Shabadim, but even from Bnei Chayrim for the improvements that he, the purchaser from a Gazlan, put into the property.